Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Red and White Authority brought to you by Labatt Blue. I'm Daniela Bruce alongside Art Regner, and today we've got a Grand Rapids Griffins-focused podcast because Grand Rapids is on to the second round of the AHL playoffs, and they had a really good first round, a really interesting and competitive first round in which Art was at a couple of the games in Grand Rapids. So we'll talk about that. Dan Watson will join us, and we've got some sound bites and another bonus 2 minute minor interview with Marco Casper Art. So it's a good episode.
Right. It's Griffins. That's all I can say. Grand Rapids Griffins.
Griffins. There you go. Yes, a million times Griffins.
All right. That's very good, Daniela. Very good.
Well, let's just start with this, Art. You were there for part of the series with Rockford, and you got to see Grand Rapids win on Sunday. What did you make of the two games that you saw in person?
Well, I'll tell you what. They're a young club. I mean, they have some good veteran leadership on there. And I think the world of Dan Watson. I think he's an excellent coach. He's going to be in the NHL someday. He will be an NHL coach, but first game was not so good. The first game was in Rockford, and Jonathan Berggren scored a game winner in overtime on an impossible angle. If you haven't seen it, it's all over YouTube or whatever on the Griffins website. You've got to watch it. So I think everybody was expecting, wow, they're going to come back in game two, first home game, first playoff game in Grand Rapids in, like, I don't know, before COVID. And people were really jacked. The building was rocking. And they lost 5-1. It's one of the worst games I've ever seen in the history of Grand Rapids Griffins hockey. And I've seen a lot of Griffins hockeys over the year. But they were all shell-shocked. Dan was upset. He addressed the team. We're going to talk to him about that. And, you know, you were just wondering, you know, what's going to happen because they're young. Well, game three, which is the deciding one, it's 3 out of 5. Whoever wins that second game puts themselves in good position. Grand Rapids had a 3-1 lead. Blew it late in the third. Rockford scores 2 goals within like a minute and a half of each other. Overtime happens, and you're thinking, oh, gosh, here we go. Here we go. And boom, what happens? Jonathan Berggren again in overtime. Beautiful play from Carter Mazur, who's really developing nicely. And bam, they win, and then they go to Rockford and defeat them 4-2. Berggren again with the game-winning goal. So pretty impressive. They're a nice high-end team, a lot of Red Wing prospects. I came away watching a team grow. When you lose 5-1 in front of your home fans, and then you come back and blow a 2-goal lead late, and then you end up winning in overtime, I think that this is going to propel this team to have a really good playoff run. As you said, the second round up next, which will be the Central Division Final. I think that we're going to be going to Grand Rapids quite a bit here in the next month or so, Daniela.
I'm in. Let's do it. And you mentioned some of the learning and the growing that you saw this team do. A couple of the players that returned to Grand Rapids for the playoff run, Austin Zarnik, Simon Edvinson, they got a taste of some of those high pressure season on the line type games in Detroit. And Dan Watson talks about how he thinks that has helped them in this playoff run. But you talked to Simon, Art, and you asked him how the time in Detroit prepared him for the AHL playoffs. So let's listen in.
Of course, good confidence. I just feel like my game style has been on a good level, and I feel like I play my type of hockey, so I feel comfortable go out there every night, and that's something that I took down from Detroit.
So Simon obviously feeling a little confident after the games and the minutes and the pressure situations that he was put in Detroit. But I think that's exactly what you want when you send him back to Grand Rapids for the playoff run.
Well, certainly. And I'm not knocking the AHL, second best league in the world for sure. But I will say this. There were some plays that he made which were a cut above. They were NHL plays, and you could tell that, you know, Simon's ready. Simon's a Red Wing, and it's great to see him down there. He liked Grand Rapids. You know, when we had him on the podcast, you could tell he has an affinity for that town. They have an affinity for him, and he's ready. But one thing he is steamed about is not making the playoffs in Detroit.
Oh,
that's going to live with him all summer long.
I remember his face after the last game in Montreal, and it's burned in my memory too. And you could tell that that's something as a young player, a lot of the players on the Red Wings right now are going to remember heading into next season.
This is going to be a summer of stewing for the Red Wings.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, the guys in Grand Rapids, hopefully they get to come up victorious and celebrate
their
a little
Calder
bit.
Cup t-shirts and all. Hey, we're champions.
Yeah, we won.
It's going to be a bloodbath in training camp when those two teams get out of the ice.
Another player you got to chat with was goaltender Sebastian Kosa. Obviously, all eyes have been on him since he was drafted by the Red Wings in the first round in 2021. You talked to him just about what some of those games taught him. You mentioned Grand Rapids gives up a 2-goal lead late in the game, and then they have to go into overtime and still come away with the win. You asked him about that, and here is what he said he learned from those situations.
I mean, you know, we've done it all year. I think for me personally, one of the biggest things I've worked on this year is probably my mental strength. And, like I said, a little frustrated after the blown lead there, but, come in, have a little bit of time to reset. And, I think I did a really good job, just reminding myself, what to do out there. And, I still had full confidence that we were going to win the game. I wasn't going to let a goal in there. So, just resetting and, obviously it's going to happen.
I wasn't letting a goal in there. If there's one thing you like to hear from your goalie after giving up two quick goals in the third period, it's that, right? That's exactly what you want to hear?
Yeah, if I was busting his chops, I'd say, well, doctor, isn't that, shouldn't you feel that way all the time? Isn't it your mindset, like every game you're playing, no matter what?
It's tough. No,
it's true, though.
The mental game of being a goalie is tough.
Right, and it was good to hear him say that, Exactly. The way he bounced back, and he did bounce back, and he was absolutely fantastic on the closeout game Sunday afternoon in Rockford.
And it was a great series for Grand Rapids. As we mentioned, they're going to move on to the next round. They'll play either the Texas Stars or the Milwaukee Admirals. Each will be a tough series. And Dan Watson is going to join us now to recap that first series and look ahead for the Griffins. Joining us today on the Red and White Authority, we've got the head coach of the Grand Rapids Griffins, Dan Watson. Dan, an exciting time for the Griffins. So we appreciate you taking some time out of the busy schedule to join us today. Thank you.
No, thanks for having me on once again. I know I've been on here a few times and always a pleasure.
Last time you joined the Red and White Authority, I was just the producer, in the background, making sure
that's right.
Stayed in line, right? So now I'm excited to be a part of
the lobby of a hotel. That's right.
He almost came down wearing his pajamas and thankful for me to have made sure he was dressed appropriately.
Yeah, well, I thought I was, I'm so comfortable with Dan. I mean, Seth just asked me how many times has he been on? And I said, you must have been on. You are right up there as the number one guest of this podcast. You have at least been on, I think, 10 times, Dan.
It's been quite a few. But it's been fun. That means something's going on, either Walleye World, now Griffin's World, Prospect World. Something's going on in my life.
That or you're the only one that will agree to join him. One of the two.
Oh, boy. Oh, come on now.
Dan's my standby guest.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Whenever someone cancels Dan, I've got you on speed dial, So.
Hey. I'm always here for you, Art.
I know. I know you are. That's why I think, I'm just going to say it. Dan's now a big Michigan football fan because of me.
Oh, my goodness. I told him not to bring up Michigan football. It's like a test. Can he go a podcast without bringing up Michigan football?
Well, he brought me a shirt. I should say that shirt is fantastic. So I appreciate that, Art.
Yeah.
Like I told you, I had no affiliation. I had no affiliation prior to. So I guess I have to be affiliated with the Wolverines now.
All right.
That's music to my ears.
That's fair. National championship. I guess they deserve it.
There you go.
There is something big going on for you right now, Dan. You're coaching the Griffins in the middle of a playoff run, and this is your first year as an AHL head coach. So first question for you, it started off a little slow. The team did, but you guys really got it cooking around the holidays there. And now you're in a playoff race. What type of adjustment period, if any, was there for you as a head coach?
Well, there was. There certainly was. I think, being in the ECHL and not to discredit the players down there, what their goals are. When you get to the American League, everybody in that locker room wants to get to the NHL. And it's their job. It's what they do. They're passionate about it. And so for me, getting there, just some of the messaging, some of, how passionate these guys are. If you sit a guy out, that's a big deal. If a guy doesn't get power play minutes or penalty minutes, that's a huge deal. And so I think just trying to get the culture the right way to get everyone to buy into playing for and being a Griffin and being in Grand Rapids, I don't want to say it was a struggle, but it took longer than what I expected it to in terms of getting everything behind closed doors the right way. And once we got that sorted out and settled right before Christmas, there were four games before Christmas against Texas. I think we won one out of the three, and the other ones we got absolutely crushed. But I did see us turn around in terms of how we were playing as a team. And then at a Christmas break, guys went home and kind of got rejuvenated. And, you know, kind of the rest is history, where they sort of bought in to be a team, play for Grand Rapids, play for each other. Those are all cliche things to say, but it is true. I really do believe that whatever happens inside that locker room does bleed out onto the ice. And you can see that we started playing better as a team, and a result started to happen.
I wanted to ask you about, you know, this was a transitional year for you because you were so ingrained. You know, I've always called you Mr. Toledo Walleye Hockey, you know, and Derek Lalonde sometimes like rolls his eyes because I guess he thinks he is too.
we'll have words about that. No problem there.
but your family stayed in Ohio. You were basically living a bachelor's life this year in GR, weren't you?
Yeah. And it was tough at times. There's no doubt about it. You know, three kids, and my wife's got a full-time job. She's extremely busy. She's holding down the fort and, you know, doing the homework and running kids here and there and everywhere. I've got my in-laws helping. My parents and sister, they both came down to help out at times. And my wife was out of town for her job. So it was interesting time. I probably spent too much time at the arenas. You know, I think I was there between 6 and 6:30, and sometimes leaving at 5, 5:30. But really, I was really going home to anything. So I would stay and do more work or watch more hockey or, you know, and do that. And again, you've got to find ways to balance home life too. I was able to get home, obviously, Christmas and All-Star break. And we played Cleveland four times. So, travel in the day before and stay an extra day. So and then we were fortunate they were able to get to Grand Rapids and watch some games and spend a couple weekends there too. So we made it work. Is it perfect? No. Would I love to be here full time? Yes. But at the same time, it's, we made a commitment after last year and if we're going to do this, now is the time. It was perfect timing to become the head coach in Grand Rapids.
Did you have to learn how to cook, or did you go out to a lot of movies, or did you carry out every single day? I mean, what was bachelor life like?
You know what? I cook here, so I'm the cook at home anyways. No, it was a lot of eating out. We also had Steph Julian, the assistant coach. His wife wasn't with them the year, and same with Roope Koisinen from Finland. So the three of us kind of hung out together. I went to dinners whenever the Red Wings are on. We found a spot to go watch the game. It was just simple. Let's put it that way. Very, very simple.
What is the Dan Watson specialty dish? And when Daniela and I come over to your pad there, your bachelor pad in GR, what are you going to be serving us?
Not much in that place, I'll tell you that right now. I was on the grill last night. I kept it simple last night for the family. Just burgers, hot dogs, corn on the cob, some potatoes. Just kept it real simple. An American classic last night, let's put it that way. But I'll try and cook anything.
That's like the go-to meal once the weather starts turning, right? The burgers, hot dogs, corn on the grill as soon as it starts to get
nice. Exactly.
Yes, love that.
Exactly. It was beautiful here yesterday.
First sign of spring.
Exactly. When you're grilling burgers
on the grill. That's right.
That means it's coming.
Playoff hockey, baseball, and burgers.
That's right. Perfect. Sounds like a great night. But we mentioned Derek Lalonde, and you guys have had a great relationship for a long time. But now I feel like you probably communicate even more so than you might even like to, with the fact that you are the head coach of Grand Rapids and he's head coach in Detroit. Can you talk about that relationship, how it's evolved a little bit now that you are in the AHL?
Yeah, I think, you know, after he left Toledo and got himself to Iowa, then to Tampa, it was a lot of our conversations were more personal in terms of how is your family? How are you doing? It wasn't, you know, we talked about hockey and asked how everyone was, you know, how's Tampa doing? Well, we just keep winning Stanley Cups. How's Toledo doing? Well, we just make the playoffs again, you know, little things like that. But it was more about family and just checking in to see how each other is doing. Now it is, it's about how is this guy playing? How is this prospect playing? And what kind of systems are you running here? How is the game? So it becomes more about hockey. Yes, family's still involved, and those questions get asked to make sure everyone's doing okay because we are close friends. But it did become more about hockey, and I mean, he was great to check in all the time. You know, just making sure everything was running smooth. And again, it's he and I have go back to 2014 when, or you know, when we didn't, I didn't know him, he didn't know me, and he was, you know, kept me on staff after a bad 13-14 season in Toledo. And so I think just that trust, that respect factor has turned into a really, really good friendship.
How has his coaching style, or how have you influenced each other? Because you're like a second son to him, and you might even be the same age. I don't even know. But I mean, you know, he really...
He's older. Come on, Art. He's older.
All right. Yeah, I was trying to suck up to Derek a little bit there. But
that's right.
but really, I mean, you two do seem to have a bond. When I ask him about you, you can tell. And Danielle has seen it. He just kind of glows about you.
Well, I think, you know what? In the ECHL, when we were in Toledo, it was the two of us. You know, it really was. So whatever I did, he had to trust I was doing my job. Whatever he did as the head coach, I had to trust that he was doing it for the betterment of the entire group, which, you know, you get 10, 20, 30 games into a season. We're having success. He's pushing all the right buttons. You know, I got to sit back and learn from him. I'd only learned from one other head coach, Nick Vitucci, back in the day. So Derek was the second guy I got to learn from. Just learned how to run a team, what it looks like behind closed doors, how to build a culture, how to, you know, turn an organization around, quite frankly, in terms of the hockey side of things. So, again, it's understanding those types of things. And for me, it was his first time in pro hockey. You know, he's in the USHL, he's in the NCAA rank. So dealing with professionals was probably a little bit different for him. I'm sure schedules were a little bit different. Practices were a little bit different. So I think he got to learn the pro side, what I've already been through and experienced. So I knew the league well. I think he trusted that. And then we just kind of went about our business. You know, whatever projects he assigned to me, I did my best job. And whatever he wanted to work on behind scenes, I was there to help him out as best I could. And so it just, again, it became two guys trying to win and trying to work together and try to build a program that could be sustainable, which it is today.
You mentioned that a lot of the players that you coach in Grand Rapids, now their goal is to get to the NHL, right? So in turn, how collaborative are you and Derek on whether that's your coaching styles, obviously the systems and things like that, different levels, of course, but are there some similarities in the way that you guys coach the Red Wings and the Griffins?
Yeah, there is. And again, I think one thing that was important to me, and I even did it in Toledo, is just continuity, especially with the language. You know, you can go through several teams and the language is different in terms of what they talk about breakouts or defensive zone coverage. So I wanted to make sure that what we're speaking in Grand Rapids, they were speaking in Detroit and vice versa, obviously. And I think some of the systems are certainly the same. Now, there's going to be times where we have to change because of personnel. You know, when you get an Austin Zarnik, Jonathan Berger, and Simon Evanson called up, you don't have that same personnel where maybe you can do the same thing. So, you know, you make a little adjustments along the way, what's best for your team, but overall the foundations are the same.
Nobody has made more adjustments, I think, on the fly as a head coach than you in the ECHL. Dan tells me a story. One of his defensemen, I don't know if he was in Texas or not, gets called up, gets a contract with the Chicago Wolves, and he leaves, and then Dan is scouring the planet to try to find a defenseman to play for the Walleye that night. And you know, and the reason I bring that up is because as a head coach, you have never missed the playoffs ever. Your teams have never missed the playoffs. What is your success and what makes a team a playoff team?
Good players, number one, good coaching staff that are willing to work. And you got to have the front office staff engaged and involved. With, again, you look at Toledo, you look at Grand Rapids, great fan base. Players want to play in front of great fan bases, and we want to take care of home ice, which we did this year. Again, medical group, equipment group, they've got to be sharp and on task. I think we've done a really good job of that in both places I've been. But I think it just comes down to making sure the guys are focused on what's needed that day and not looking too far ahead. You know, we break our season up into 5-game segments, so that way we aren't looking at 2 weeks from now, we have this long trip. We've got a 3-3. So we just kind of focus on what's at task right in front of us and not worry about what's going to happen down the road. Same thing in playoffs. You know, I think I haven't lost in the first round yet either. And it's, again, it's focusing on that day to day and what you have to do that day. Game two, we got absolutely slaughtered. You were there, Art.
Yeah.
It was not pretty. And again, you turn the page quickly. It's one game. It's one loss. We move on. Let's win game three and get the lead.
You know, it was the most animated when they lost 5-1. And I remember you said something that you addressed the team for maybe one of the first times or very few times all season, because coaches, you know, coaches aren't in there like giving like the Herb Brooks speech like every game or something like that. But you told them, hey, this is unacceptable hockey. And you could tell because it's a young club, the Griffins are, a lot of Red Wing prospects on it. They seemed almost shell-shocked after that game. I mean, they just seemed like, what did we just go through?
Yeah, it was I went right in there, and it's a wake-up call. You know, it's hard. And we do have a young group. And you know, the guys that were the leaders, the experienced guys were in there, were trying their hardest. There's no doubt about that. But every game gets harder that you go through. And, you know, it's just one of those things, like you mentioned, I don't go into games after losses. It's just sometimes then coaches get too emotional, adrenaline's pumping, you might say something you're going to regret. So you let it simmer overnight, give it the 24 hours, and then you address it then. Especially after watching video back, it might not be as bad as what you think it is right then and there, but the emotions are so high. But I knew after that game exactly how we played. It was pretty easy to walk in there and just let them know how hard it is. You have to compete. You've got to be ready to battle. And we didn't do it that night, but there's still opportunity. And that's the positive side of it. You can learn from it right away. And the opportunity now becomes a best of three series with two games at home. Let's win the next one. And our guys came out on fire in game four, or game three, sorry.
They did, and end up winning the series. So, but two of the games that you did win were in overtime. So it was a very tough series, very well-played series. Just wondering how you would characterize that series. How would you describe your team's efforts in getting the three wins and moving on to the next round?
Yeah, I thought we were a little tentative in game one. I think, again, just nerves probably off the hop on the road. But to come back and score two goals in the third period to tie it, a resilient group, win it in overtime, the way we did, kind of gave us momentum. I thought that momentum would carry into game two. We've talked about game two. I'd like to throw that tape right away, that video right away. And game three, you know, the response that our guys had, that's what I'm probably the most proud of, is the way we came out in game three. We were physical. We were competitive. We battled. Guys are playing harder than I've seen all year. And we willed ourselves to that win. Even though Rockford came back, we still had momentum, carried it right through into overtime, Berge with another overtime goal. And then going on the road, I like the fact it was a quick turnaround. There wasn't 3-4 days in between. It was right away. Let's get after it. And again, we got off to a good start, carried good momentum all the way through the game. And yeah, they pressured us in the end, which is another thing we can learn about, is handling pressure when you have the lead. But overall, it was a really tight series. It was a tight series all year long with Rockford, but proud of our guys for getting through it.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about Jonathan Berggren. He's a guy that is intriguing to Red Wing fans. He scored all three game-winning goals. It's the best of five series. Grand Rapids, two of the games, as Daniela said, went into overtime. He scored, as I said, all three game-winning goals in this series. He also led the Griffins in goals, assists, points. He was a plus player. In all your years of coaching, Danny, you've coached some pretty good players over the years. Where does Berggren's season rank as far as playoff performance? What makes him such a highly skilled offensive player? So why is he so dangerous, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Well, he makes the hard plays look easy. You know, I think he sees the ice extremely well, and then he knows when to take advantage of opportunities, and he cashes in on those opportunities. You know, if you look at the overtime goals in game one, he willed himself to the net. He held off the defender, got a puck to a net, it goes in. The second overtime goal, he makes a play to Mazur, hits the post, but he wins the race to the net and scores a big goal. And then, again, the game winner in game four, it's a short side right near the goalie's helmet. There's not too many guys that can make that shot. Even though they're becoming more and more regular in the game, he just knows where to put pucks, and he scores big goals. I think he's a big game player in terms of he wants to, you know, he wants to be the hero. And, you know, we're going to give him all that opportunity to do that for us, because quite frankly, we need his offense. You know, we're not an overly offensive team. We need him to produce, and he showed up for us in round one.
How difficult is it for you with a player like Berggren, who has gotten a taste of the NHL and you know he wants to be there, feels like he might deserve to be there, but is still playing at the AHL level and really is tearing it up in the AHL? How hard has that been for you to kind of keep his confidence level up there to make sure that you guys have him on the right track to become that NHLer he wants to be?
Well, I think, you know, in situations like that, it's playing and keeping mentally where you're at. Mm-hmm. So be great where you're at. Don't look ahead. It'll happen. And when it happens, you'll be ready. You'll be more than ready. And, you know, and in Grand Rapids, play as hard as you can for the Griffins, play as hard as you can for your teammates, do what you need to do in order to become an NHL hockey player. And, you know, he's bought into that. You know, Bergie around the rink, he's great to be around. He's got a lot of life to him. He keeps it light. A lot of joking around, but then come game time, you know, he's engaged, and he's engaged, especially when he's got the puck. He loves to have the puck on a stick. He wants to have the puck on a stick. But again, it's the whole mental side, you know, for a couple of our players down there for the whole year. It's play hard for the Griffins, and when you get that chance, you're going to be more than ready.
Not only is coaching an X and O's thing, but Daniela brings up an excellent point. You have to be kind of psychologist, because at the ECHA level or the AHL level, you know that they want to go to the next level. So how do you, because you were in that same situation as a player yourself, Dan, how much do you, you know, you bring out the, you know, the pen and paper and your Sigmund Freud or somebody there with these guys?
You know what? It's a lot of meetings, a lot of talking, a lot of messages. Again, it's part of the culture. You know, again, and in the ECHL, we wanted players that didn't want to be in the ECHL. We wanted players who wanted to get to the American League, because they're going to be good players, but they're going to be hungry. They're going to be hungry every day to get better. They're going to be hungry every day to try and improve themselves and try and improve their team. It's no different. It's no different in Grand Rapids. I feel probably even more. These guys, they're right there, and they know it. Now it's being more detailed on what do they need to do, what part of their game actually has to improve for them to become, whether it's a full-time Griffins player to get more power play time or penalty kill time. What do they have to do to get, you know, capture the eyes of management to become an NHL player? What does that look like for them? So just the detail goes into that development side of it. And then the messaging of making sure you're doing the right things at the arena, away from the arena. This is their job. You know, they chose this to be their profession, and there's a lot that goes into it, a lot of sacrifice, commitment, dedication. They have to own that.
Next up, potentially for the Griffins, well, actually, not potentially, definitely next up for the Griffins is either the Texas Stars or the Milwaukee Admirals. They're playing right now, and the Stars lead that series 2-0 currently. Next three games in Milwaukee, but you've seen these teams. You play against both of them. Either way, what are the Griffins going to have to do against teams like that in the second round?
Well, against Texas, they're an offensive powerhouse. They play with a ton of speed, mm-hmm. just like we saw with Rockford. So we're going to be great defensively. And I said, we've got to be great defensively no matter what. But especially against Texas, they just, you know, they can make you pay for bad puck management, turnovers. They capitalize, and their power play is very good. So our penalty kill needs to be sharp as well. Against Milwaukee, they're bigger, heavier, more simple team, north, south, get to the net. So we need some physicality in that series for sure. And we're going to have to make sure that we are hard around our net, hard around their net. Both teams right now, great goaltending. Remy Poirier is playing unbelievable. And obviously Askarov there has played some NHL games with Nashville, another very good goaltender. So we got to make their lives miserable by getting to the nets. And that's where the games are won in playoffs. It's around the nets. And Milwaukee's got a really big team that they dominate the net front of times.
When you look at this series and where you're at right now, the Griffins did not play well in game two. And I don't want to keep bringing that up. But what have you learned about this young club, especially to come back and win two games in Rockford? Two games in Rockford out of the four that you played. I mean, and the way they responded after that 5-1 game. I mean, is this team coming together as you thought they would?
Yeah, they're a resilient group. They're a resilient bunch. You know, the comebacks we had during the regular season, that doesn't happen. You don't do it 8 times. That's not, you know, you have to make sure you're working towards that. They understand what they need to do. Same thing in the series. Okay, you have a bad game two. Let's see your resiliency in game three. Let's see your bounce back mentality. And these guys have that. I think they saw and realized how hard we have to play to have success in game three and four. those were two games that were, our guys were battle tested. It was the grind. They had to play with a lot of grit. And so I think, you know, our guys understand how they have to play now. So again, that game too, yes, it was negative, but you got to turn that into a positive. And I think it was a great wake up, a great learning lesson for all the players.
All right. To wrap this up here today, we're going to give you a few names because there are a lot of exciting Red Wings prospects on this Griffins roster. Yeah. You're going to give us a little synopsis of their season so far. And even if you want to get into their playoff performance as well, too, I'm going to start with Sebastian Kosa because the kid just improves at every level. We saw him with you in the ECHL last year in Toledo and in the steps he took in his game there. And then throughout the season this year, the steps he's taken in his game at the AHL level. What has impressed you about him this season?
Well, his maturity, again, the maturity off the ice, growing his, I guess, his preparation for practices, for games, a bunch of little things that he does that he wasn't doing in Toledo. You know, it's new things that we have here in Grand Rapids that Detroit allows us to have for him. He's been doing it day in and day out. Doesn't miss a day. It's unbelievable. He walks in right into our coach's room and grabs rope and says, let's go. And they go do it. So I think that's been the most impressive. And his battle level, his compete level around the net, he's making himself bigger. He's competing around the crease where it's hard to play. So just that maturity, that growth off the ice and on the ice, he's a really, really good young prospect right now.
Let's go with, I guess my nickname for him is the actor, Marco Casper. he's really, really come on the second half and he came up big in the playoffs as well.
Yeah, we've given Casper a lot of responsibility to play with Zach Aston-Reese, Dominic Schine, to go against teams' top lines. I don't want to say a shutdown line because they can still produce offense, but they're going to be hard to play against. And Marco is competitive, as I've seen, really, really competitive. Even in the first round, you know, getting some scrums around the net front, maybe which he wasn't doing enough of in the regular season, but just letting his presence known, his physicality be known. Unbelievable on the faceoff dot last game. Yeah, I think he was 13-2, 13-3. So he's becoming a consummate pro, a day-to-day pro. I thought his game is elevated from day one, probably where he was trying to understand the North American game, understand the size, understand the pace, the speed at which defenders are coming at you. So he's adjusted well, and now you can see he's a 200-foot player for us.
I'm going to go with Simon Edvinson too. And I think all of us are pretty confident that Simon's going to be a Red Wing next season, but the fact that he's with you for this playoff run in Grand Rapids, what will this experience not only do for him, but what has his experience in the NHL brought you guys in Grand Rapids?
Well, I think when he came down, he was involved in a lot of intense games and games that mattered. Obviously, you know, your season was on the line in Detroit, and he played in those games. And so he saw, again, a resilient group, a lot of comebacks, a lot of overtime wins, shootout wins that mattered. Those points mattered. So he brought that back with him. And the experience he's going to go through, he's been playing under some pressure here. You know, the microscope's on him right now. Mm-hmm. You know, the pressure to perform every single game is on him. And that's not going to be any different next year for him. So I think this is going to help prepare him. And hopefully, again, you get that hunger to win. You get that hunger to have success. He can bring that with him next year. And hopefully we can go on a little bit longer here. And he's going to bring how hard it is to win with him every day to the rink.
Another blue liner who is going to be a Red Wing next year, Steve said it in his post-game comments, is Albert Johansson, who had a really good year. What can you tell us about Albert?
Well, Albert's a guy that you have to watch him to appreciate him. You got to stick with him too. He's competitive. He's simple. He's smart. He can skate. He's got a great stick in the defensive zone. Again, you have to. The longer I've been with him, the more I appreciate his game. He's probably the most consistent defenseman all year long for us in terms of what he brings to the table, what he can bring to the table. Wasn't on the power play. Now he is. So he's just elevated his game and continues to do so. And I think that's why, you know, maybe Steve had those comments that he's going to be a Red Wing. I know he's got to clear waivers next year. And I think that's a big part of it because he's a very, very talented defenseman.
All right. We each get one more, Art. So choose wisely.
Okay. All right.
Make your choice.
I listed about 15 guys. So
yeah. My choice is Carter Mazur. And I think last training camp in September, when he ended up getting injured, it was a big disappointment, not only to him, but to everybody else, because we had some expectations on him too. How have you seen him kind of battle through that and come out stronger on the other end?
Yeah, I think at the start of the year, when he came out of his injury, it took him a little while. But then once he got going, got his feet moving again, what I like about him is he plays through bodies already. He's kind of got an old school mentality to his game, which I really like. You don't see that too often anymore. Again, a great guy around the net front on our power play, scored the most power play goals for us around the net. Even the playoffs right now, you just kind of get that junkyard dog mentality that he's not going to stop at anything. He's just going to go through whatever he has to go through. He's going to deal with whatever he has to deal with. He's a gamer. I guess that's probably the best way to say it. But for him, again, to grow, it's getting stronger. But again, he's a guy that everybody's going to love. You know, love him on your team, but hate to play against him.
I want to apologize to the eight guys that I'm not going to be able to mention here before my last player. And this is a tough choice for me, but I have to go because you inserted him. He's been dealing with injuries after game two against Rockford. You inserted him into game three, and that's Big Elmer, you know, who Simon calls a mountain of a man, and he definitely is. But Elmer Soderblom, I mean, he is, you know, he scored a big goal for you in game four, I guess it was, or no, game three it was. So
three, yeah.
You know, I mean, he, you know, it's he's interesting because he was in Detroit. He went down to GR. He wasn't called up this year. Is he one of those guys that, I don't know, Dan, you have to not pump up so much, but kind of keep an eye on?
Yeah, no, he's he went through spells this season where he looked like an NHLer. And that happens when he's moving his feet. He's getting to the net front. He has something that no one can teach, and that's his size. You can't teach that. You can teach him how to play with his size, but you can't teach his size. So with that said, it's getting him to move his feet, knowing protect the puck. He can spend so much time with it because of his size, but how to do it the right way and then when to move it. And then for him getting to the net and that big goal that he scores, because he won a race to a net, right, and no one's going to knock him off the puck in those areas. And so if he does that consistently, he's going to get rewarded with more ice time, more opportunity. And we saw it down the stretch. Unfortunately, he went through this illness that he just couldn't shake. I mean, he missed time just coming to the arena because he couldn't get rid of this illness. And it's unfortunate because when he got sick, he was playing unbelievable hockey. He really was. And I saw in game three, you know, he looked energized. He looked like he had his feet underneath him. And so, again, we hope that we get that Elmer that Detroit saw the first half of the season, because he can be a special, special player for us. And again, this is another prospect that can continue to grow his game and hopefully get back to the NHL.
It's such an exciting time for the Griffins and all the prospects that are playing with you right now. This is going to do nothing but help them in the long run. So and we're rooting for you guys. We're paying attention heavy here in Detroit. So we wish you the best, Dan. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, certainly appreciate it. Dan, thanks, Art.
Dan, I have to ask you a question. Oh, I don't know if anybody can see. I know you
I tried, Dan.
First of all, your home is beautifully decorated. I don't know if you cook and you're part of the decoration.
That's not me. Right. No.
But there's a picture behind you that is a close-up of some skates and I believe a stick. Is that Dan Watson? Is that a like a self, not portrait, but is that picture of you?
No chance. You know what? Just keep the pictures off the wall of me. Let's do that for sure. No, this is kind of my little office that was built while I was gone away. So now I actually have a spot to talk to you guys, to do some work on the computer, and a place to call my own here.
Love that. Well, if you're moving on again, if you move on to the next round, we'll probably be calling you again. So this is your warning. Okay.
Perfect.
All right.
Well, you'll see me. I mean,
yeah, he'll be there.
We can't wait till you cook us a dinner when we're, you know, in that whatever you're living in Grand Rapids.
All right.
If not, it's training camp. We got those houses. We'll have a big cookout somewhere. That's what we'll do.
Okay, that's even better.
Love that idea. Thanks again, Dan.
Thank you, Dan. Best of luck, buddy.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Another big thank you to the head coach of the Grand Rapids Griffins, Dan Watson, for taking the time to join us as they look ahead to the second round of the playoffs. While Art was in Grand Rapids watching a couple of the games, he was able to catch up with Marco Casper for today's 2-Minute Minor. We learned some interesting facts about Marco, so check it out.
Thank you, Daniela. Joining us for the 2-Minute Minor is Marco Casper, Red Wing prospect, Red Wing center, really, Grand Rapids Griffin center. Marco, thanks for doing this. You know, first of all, how was your first year in North America? I mean, you know, too much fast food, or do you actually have that in Austria too?
Yeah, thanks for having me. No, I'm not a big fast food guy. I mean, there's a McDonald's in every corner, but I'm not having it that much. So I really like the food here, though. It's really good food in Grand Rapids, I think. And it's been an up and down year, I think, in Grand Rapids for me as a player. And I mean, we played way better after Christmas, I think. So yeah, it's been a good fun year, first year, I think.
Do you look at the Red Wing roster, or do you, because you're so close to Detroit, you can know what's going on, that, you know, I have a chance next season to be a Red Wing?
I mean, I think, like, everybody, like, we see what's going on. I mean, we watch the games and stuff like that. But honestly, my focus is really on Grand Rapids right now. Like, we're in the playoffs. That's all my focus is on. And whatever happens after that, it's up in the air. I think I'm going to practice really hard in the summer, and then we'll see what happens next season.
I think what most people really want to know is that not only are you a tremendous hockey player, but you have some acting chops. And now, what about this, the Herrenator that you were in? Hopefully I'm pronouncing it right. Austrian film, you were a little kid, and you got one of the plum roles as Robert Biegisch?
Robert Biegisch, yeah. It was kind of they had an audition for us, like, younger hockey players, and me and my friends just went there, and like, yeah, well, we're sure we're gonna audition for it, and somehow I got the role. I don't really know how, but we had a ton of fun playing this film. And actually, there's been a really couple of bigger actors from Austria that were in the movie, so it was a great experience. It was a lot of fun for sure.
How many lines did you have? I know you said some were cut out. I read a story where you said that most of your lines were cut out, but how many speaking parts did you have?
Yeah, honestly, I don't remember. I might have had one line that actually made the cut of the movie, but it was mostly playing hockey for me, I think. So yeah.
Do you have a favorite actor?
Adam Sandler.
Yeah. Wow.
Just
how about
comedy?
Really? How about? I never would have thought you would have said that. You know, after your hockey career's over, you know, you're giving your Hall of Fame speech in Toronto and all that. Is the next thing? Do you step onto a movie set?
If there's another hockey movie, I'd want to be in it, probably, where I don't have to speak that much because they're going to cut out my lines again. I don't know. I guess we'll see whatever in the future holds. So, yeah.
Thank you, Marco.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
Art, where did you find that Marco Casper had been a child actor at one point in his life? Because I love that.
Well, I knew that. I don't know if I read it in one of his bios or when he was drafted, but, you know, he was a young kid. And, you know, as we talk about, though, the lead in this movie, which I don't know if there's a dubbed English version, is an actor who I actually watch in a television series on PBS called Vienna Blood. And he learned English specifically for that role. It's the first English role. And Marco, though, does not keep in contact with, I believe it's Jürgen Mauer.
It's so unfortunate. Yes, but you could have met him.
Marco's a great kid, and he's really, really come on. And you know what I think it is with him? He's calmed down, because it was a little bit easy to get under his, you know, get under his grill and get him off his game. He's learned how to be a physical force, because he's a feisty little Austrian, but he also knows that his goal is to score and set his teammates up, and he's doing that quite well now.
I am thrilled that his favorite actor is Adam Sandler. I'm thrilled about it, because he's up there with one of mine too. Like, my favorite movie of all time. Have I ever told you?
I think I have told you.
The Wedding Singer. It is my favorite movie of all time.
You know, that one isn't bad. I don't know. You know, I guess because I was such a Saturday Night Live freak, I guess, you know, after a while, the ongoing characters, I get kind of tired of them. And so I don't know. Something about Adam Sandler, I think first of all, he's a tremendous person. Mm-hmm. He really is a good guy. But just like Kevin Costner or something, there's just something about those guys that, I don't want to watch their movies.
Wow, that's disappointing.
Sorry.
Old school Adam Sandler is probably, nothing beats it. So I'm kind of disappointed in that take, Art.
Well, but I, you know, you could have asked me beforehand. Hey, you're going to ask Marco Casper who his favorite actor is. Well, here, just get the list off 10 names. Who do you think? Adam Sandler would not have been among my 10 choices for Marco Casper.
I think it would have.
I would have thought like Ryan Gosling or whomever the hot people are. You know, I love Ken.
What are you saying about Adam Sandler?
Well, if he would have told me I like Barbie, you know, whatever. But yeah, it was good. Yeah, he's a good guy. He's gonna be a Red Wing. He'll be a Red Wing.
All right.
I already told him that. Usually, when I tell guys, yeah, you're gonna be a Red Wing, you're here for a long time, the Wings end up trading him. Sorry, Thomas Tatar.
Jeez, just why don't you close your mouth then?
I still Nyquist. Mike Green, sorry, all you guys.
Gee, probably Big Tony, too.
Oh, Big Tony, yeah. I had him, you know, in the Hall of Fame. Anthony Mantha, yeah. So I just keep my mouth shut now.
Yeah, we need you to do that.
Dylan does not want me to predict his future.
Just don't even look at Dylan, actually. Yeah, really? Just don't even look at him.
The doctor doesn't care. Sebastian doesn't care.
All right, Art. Well, why don't you tell us about one of your other favorite things? Labatt Blue.
Ooh, I do love it, especially this time of year, you know, out there grilling, you know, after work, and you're sitting there and, you know, you put that big bonfire in the barbecue and you got to wait for a while so to make the flames die down so you don't burn everything. What do? You grab a Labatt Blue. You just sit there and watch that fire as your neighbors are calling the fire department, but you're just watching it and you're just drinking that beautiful, official Canadian beer, the Detroit Red Wings. It's frothy. It's cool. It's great. But we do ask that you drink our Canadian beer responsibly.
And by responsibly, do not let your house burn down while you're enjoying a Labatt Blue.
I sometimes put a little too much lighter fluid on. I'm still a charcoal guy. So, yeah, my neighbors, so
jeez.
It's like, whoa.
Art's grilling again. The neighborhood might burn down.
There's some black smoke, you know. I guess we can leave smoke signals here or something.
Oh, my goodness. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Red and White Authority. We'll see you next time.